TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa's first community radio station. Denied a license under the old apartheid regime, Bush Radio went on the air illegally in 1993. Two broadcasters were arrested and the equipment confiscated. After the historic election in 1994, the first broadcast licenses issued by the Mandela government were specifically for community broadcasters. In June of 1995, Bush Radio began licensed broadcasts. In celebration of World Radio Day and Black History Month 2016, this is a rebroadcast of an interview with Brinda Leonard. She's one of the founders of Bush Radio. I asked Brinda for a 2016 update, and she wrote, "Currently, South Africa has over 250 community radio stations, and they're reaching over 9.2 million listeners each day, which means over 170 stations have been added since 2009. Bush Radio is still a model for community radio and continues to train much of the staff at the new radio stations. They are always looking for innovative ways of engaging their listeners and marginalized groups. Controversial issues are discussed in town halls, and the debate is aired live on the air, with audience participation, both inside the town hall and through SMS, Facebook, and phone calls." Thanks to Brinda Leonard for this update. And here now is the program that I produced in 2009. When you visit Bush Radio in Cape Town any Saturday morning, you find children as young as 6 years doing their own programming. Weekdays, the news department presents local news on the air and as blog, including photos and video. Noam Chomsky came to Bush Radio to be interviewed and stayed for 5 more hours because he enjoyed the, quote, vitality, seriousness, and professionalism of staff and volunteers. Broadcasters come from around the world to spend up to 3 months at Bush Radio to get inspired by a new kind of community radio that brought black people on the air for the first time in South African history. In the summer of 2009, Brinda Leonard, the Bush Radio administrator, went on a U.S. tour of public radio stations. I met her in San Francisco and asked her to tell me about the day-to-day operations of Bush Radio.
We broadcast 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. What we've done is we have people during the day that's like interns, so they get a little bit of an allowance. And then from 4 o'clock we run completely with volunteers, so the volunteers do the programming. Saturdays and Sundays, volunteers completely doing the programming. And what we've done with our programming is we actually try to align the different days into themes. So you have Mondays, you have health. And we try all the programs to have some health within the program. Tuesdays, you have human rights. And you deal with any issue of human rights. It can be the whole question of like marriages, mixed marriages, anything like that. Then on Wednesdays we deal with gender. And gender deals with, like, besides the gender-based violence, looking at power in terms of gender, looking at the whole question of HIV and AIDS and gender and so on. Thursdays we deal with labor issues. We talk about the economy and how it affects people. We talk about rights, the rights of workers. We've talked so many, like, if new legislation comes in or if it's being introduced and people can still make an impact into the legislation, we'll talk about the legislation and its impact, get people to analyze the impact and so on. So that, and then Fridays we deal with environment and arts and culture. Then we also have on our morning show at about 10 past 9 every day till 9:30. We have a job shop, what we call job shop. So people get faxes and emails, and if not, they use the newspaper and then tell people of jobs that's available and give them the numbers, or they can call the station and get the numbers. And in that sense, offer service to people who's unemployed, who can't necessarily afford a newspaper. Overall programming, we have about 60% talk and 40% music. And we have a lot of women in the station. Our news, when I look at the news, we have 4 females and 2 males. If we look at our programming during the day, we have mostly females, probably about 60-70% is females. In the night, it's a bit different because of safety. So you find that the nights is normally dominated by males. So we ensure at least where we can, during the day we have mostly females in the station.
Do you still have childcare?
Yes, we do. You know about that. Yes, we do. We have childcare upstairs. And it helps for people who come for training, who have small kids, or people who just come for an interview. And then, obviously, it's open to the community as well.
Oh, so how many children do you have on a given day?
We have 6 to sometimes up to 10, depending. Yeah, and it's open normally quite early in the morning from about 6:30, and it's open till 5 in the afternoon.
Yes. And who's taking care of them, volunteers or paid staff?
No, paid staff. We actually have 2 paid staff that we pay out of our salaries. Yeah, and we do, like some of the people who come on a regular basis, we do charge them a little amount, so that goes towards the salaries, and then Bush Radio tops up the rest.
Are there examples where you sit in an editorial meeting and you say, this is really what we should do?
We do. Not necessarily it comes from us. It might come from one of the presenters where they picked up something, they interviewed someone. They said, you know, this is happening now. We should really look at it. Just before I came to the U.S., one of the news people came to me and they had something about the special rates areas that's introduced by the city of Cape Town, where they want people in certain areas to pay a little bit extra, and then they get specialized services, like more quality services. Mm-hmm. And we had a big problem with that. And I'm hoping that while I'm here, they're taking the issue further and actually start mobilizing people around that, because I think something like that will just divide the city into rich and poor, and we'll have major problems down the line. Another example, the city of Cape Town wanted to introduce a graffiti bylaw where people weren't allowed to have graffiti on the walls. And they wanted to criminalize people who do actually do graffiti. And we felt that graffiti is an art form. It's a form of expression. And it should not be criminalized. So what we've done is we actually ran a very public campaign around it. And we got graffiti artists to come and spray paint our hall, our garage door, on the side of the building. And we had all the media there. And then while they were in the middle of doing that, this one guy that's pushing it in the city of Cape Town, he heard, saw it on the news, and he came to our building while they're busy doing it, and he was there basically asking us why we're challenging him and so on. But the cameras were there, and all of it were recorded. So I think that boosted the whole campaign about having it not criminalized a lot. After that, they've actually dropped it. They didn't do it, so they introduced it now again as something they want to reconsider. There's constantly things like that. I must be honest, we don't always know of everything happening, but the stuff we know and we disagree with, we will actually take up. We've also done the whole thing on Bush Against War, the whole thing about the war in Iraq by George Bush when he invaded Iraq. South Africans were taking a strong stand against war, not only in Iraq, but in any part of the world. And we had massive rallies and marches in our streets. And Bush Radio, as a radio station with a name similar to George Bush, we decided to bring out a t-shirt called Bush Against War. It became one of our most popular t-shirts that was distributed right around the world. So I think things like that we do as a station. The reason sometimes people say, but you're a radio station, you should be balanced in your reporting and you shouldn't take a stand, and we disagree. We think as community media, community radio, we can take a stand because we're activists and we want a particular social change in our community. And for us to do that, we need to take a stand on issues.
So do you have formal training for young people to learn radio?
Yes, we do. We do a lot of training. We do training in the whole of the Southern Africa region. We do training in South Africa. We do training in the province. We do our own volunteers training. And we do training for International Colleges Group as a correspondence college. So they do a theoretical course in broadcasting and people come to the practical at Bush Radio. So there's always something happening to do with training at Bush Radio. We also get interns from across the world. We get interns from inside South Africa, journalism students that need to do an internship. So there's like constantly people moving. I always tell people, if you visit us today and you come back in a month's time, you're probably going to see new faces and some faces is not going to be here. So that they understand how fluid the movement of people are at Bush Radio. For young people specifically, we have a program called CREW, Children's Radio Education Workshop. And what we do, we train children between the ages of 6 to 18 to research, present, produce, and engineer their own radio programs. So on a Saturday, really, the radio station is taken over by young people that does everything. We try not to intervene in the program. We sometimes have to, especially if they put out wrong information. And I think that's probably the only time we would interfere. But otherwise, they can talk about what is important to them. We have one criteria. We tell them the music they play must be at least 50% South African music. Because that's a bit of a problem. They all go to the American top 20s. And then we have to tell them, what about South African? We're a community station. We must play South African music. So in that sense, educate them about music. So that's the one training we do for young people. Then we also do for a little bit older than 18-year-olds. We every year take 6 journalism students from the local university. And they come and they spend a year doing an internship. Now what we do with them is we train them firstly for 2 months. And the training prepares them to run the newsroom. And our newsroom is not only a radio newsroom. We also do blogging. So they need to understand how to blog. They need to know how to take photos because we put photos on our blog. And they need to know how to do short video clips because we put video on our blog. So all of that, besides the news training of writing a bulletin, getting your voice reports, getting your clips for your news, getting that, doing a voice report if you're outside at the event and what it entails. Besides that, and reading, they must also understand the multimedia component. So in that sense, when they leave, they have experience in all of those things. And we found now in the past year that our journalism graduates are actually sought after by big media companies, because most of the media companies are moving to multimedia journalism and they don't want to train people. So here you have a pool of young people that are trained in multimedia and they find work very, very easily. So that's another thing we do in terms of training. Then most of our presenters on air, our volunteer presenters, are young people. So we train them also. And what we also do is, like, we get a lot of applications from people, and we really can't take everyone. But what we tell people is, listen, apply. What we can do is we take you through the training. And if we don't take you, at least we can give you a letter saying that you've gone through this training, and you can go to one of the other community stations, because then they don't need to train you. So in that sense, we help them if they want to make it in radio, want radio as their field of choice.
You're listening to an interview with Brenda Leonard. She has been the administrator of Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, since the licensing of the station in 1995. I asked her how Bush Radio connects with the community.
We have, firstly, what is called the open forum. A forum we have once a month. Anyone in the community can actually come and participate in this forum. So what we do in this forum is we discuss, we basically give a report back to the community to say, okay, this is what we're doing, what we've done the past month, these are our challenges and so on. And then people can also ask us questions about anything. So sometimes people say, I don't like this presenter because of whatever reason. And we always tell them, listen, we can't take all your suggestions and implement it. So some of it we'll take and some of it, but give us the suggestion. Sometimes people make very good suggestions. Like, I know we have a HIV and AIDS program that's on, like, in the midday. And people would suggest that we actually rebroadcast the program sometime over the weekend because they don't always get time to listen to it. And I think those kind of suggestions we do look into and see how we can change it. Then we have, like we do our outside broadcast, we do community events that where we go to community events and then people always interact. In fact, normally if we say on air that we're going to be at this event, then it brings people to the event because we want to come and greet their favorite presenters and so on. That I think the biggest part of community participation for us is that we have volunteers, 150 volunteers. It comes from different parts of communities. So they become a source of information for that community. So they will phone us if anything happens in the communities or people will tell them and they will then call us and we'll do the follow-ups and so on. So if you listen to news, the programming, the content, it's very local. Mm-hmm. Deals with issues that affects the community. And it shows that we're very, like, entrenched within the community.
I'd always wonder how much a radio station could actually really produce a change, like, for instance, in matters of healthy food or housing or education. Do you have some examples of how a station can engage itself mm-hmm. over a longer period of time and actually something is different at the end?
Mm-hmm. I think the one example I can use is that we've, not last year, in 2007, the teachers in South Africa went on a strike about wages, and it was an extremely long strike. It was something like nearly 3 months. They went on the strike. So obviously 3 months out of the education, daily teaching takes a lot of time out of the syllabus, implementing the syllabus. And we had a discussion with them and the education department, and we said, listen, this is happening. Please, how can we help? And they said, okay, maybe what we must do revision programs on air. So what we did is we work out the whole program and we would have revisions for each subject for matriculants. And that ran over 2 months of revisions. So you had huge audiences, matriculants tuning in to listen to the revisions, like for their subjects in preparing, phoning in or emailing or SMSing, texting a message, asking questions to the subject educators that were there. And I think that for us, we reached over 800,000 matriculants, yeah. And we were lucky in the sense that our matric rate didn't go down, even though you would expect it to go down after 3 months strike. It actually went up. So the education department attributed that a lot to the help of community radio stations. Because what we've done is we've mobilized all the stations and we put the same program on all the stations. And I think that was very important. That was one where you could tangibly see at the end of the day the change.
How many hours, what subjects, how was it done?
It was 2 hours a day, every day, and it was one subject a day. So say for instance you do maths standard grade, for instance, then we did maths standard grade, mathematics higher grade, accountancy, your geography, any subject, your language subjects, English, Afrikaans, Xhosa, all your language subjects. So we each of those subjects had a day. And sometimes you write more than one paper. So you had paper one, paper two, paper three, that kind of thing. The education department also did with that is they actually printed lot of past matriculant exam papers. And they distributed it to the community station so the schools could collect those papers as well from the radio station. And the schools then distributed it at the schools. And we handed out all of it. We had boxes and boxes and boxes. And we handed out all of those exam papers to Dangas.
So who were your programmers for, let's say, history? Who came into the station to do the lecture?
It was all teachers. What we've done is we had three people in the studio. We had one person from the education department, one person from a curriculum point of view, the people that can overly tell you, the curriculum people, they're the ones that set the test. And then the last person was actually a teacher. And the teachers came from local schools, like surrounding the station.
That is Brenda Leonard, administrator of Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa. My last question for her was about the beginning of the station and how Bush Radio got its name.
Bush Radio was formed in the late 80s at the university called UWC, University of the Western Cape. And they were a college that was set up for black people. And you had the college in the middle, surrounded by dense bushes. The name, when people refer to the college, is Bush. And that's why when we started having the first talks, and this took place at Bush, and people looked at the name, they said, oh, let's call it Bush Radio. And since then, our name have actually stuck. And that's still our name up till today, even though sometimes people say, maybe we should change the name to something more funky and so on. But we like our name. We then applied for license in the early 90s to the government. It was still apartheid government. They refused. They did not give us a license. So in 1993, we ran a very public campaign saying that we're going to broadcast illegally. And it wasn't underground or anything like that. We had a small studio set up in the office. We set up the transmitter, not at Bush, at one of the trade union buildings, actually. With an antenna on their roof, and we broadcasted on a Sunday in April, 25th of April. We broadcasted for 4 hours. The police and the post office workers, because at that stage, broadcasting fell under the post office with telecommunications. So the police and the post office came to our premises the Monday, and they wanted to confiscate the transmitter. We had them look for it. We didn't tell them where it was. They found it at the trade union building. They confiscated it. They arrested two people. They were charged with being in possession of broadcasting equipment, using the broadcasting equipment, and defeating the aims of the law, something like that. And the case went on for about a year. But I think from 1993, there were a number of changes in the country. You had, for instance, that by that time, most of the ANC people had returned back into South Africa. We had these negotiations taking place, the Kodesa talks taking place on a daily basis. And you also had Radio Pretoria and Radio Kopies, which were right-wing white stations, actually broadcasting illegally as well. The government left them. They didn't actually take them off air. And what we've done when we went to court is to use this as a clear indication that the attack taking Bush off air was racist in its nature and that it didn't fit in the current political situation. So based on that, it was kicked out of court. We then had a choice of either going and broadcasting again illegally. We did actually. They gave the transmitter back. And we told them, no, you've had our transmitter for a year. We're going to test it. And we're going to put it on E. So it was the same time that Chris Hani actually passed away, and we then put it on and we did a dedicated program to Chris Hani. So from that time, we then felt, okay, we've made our point. Let's see where the processes, the political processes is going to. And then we'll decide whether we're going to broadcast illegally again or what. Obviously, we had the historic elections in 1994. And then Mandela was the president. They've set up then a committee to, it's an independent structure called the Independent Broadcasting Authority, IBA. And their role was to regulate broadcasting in South Africa. And the first thing they did was to call for license applications from community radios. And we applied, and we got the license to broadcast in 1995. We could go on air on the 1st of August, but we then decided we're not going to go on the 1st of August. We'll go on the 9th of August, because the 9th of August in our country, for the first time, was recognized as National Women's Day. And we felt that because of the contribution that women has played in getting Bush Radio to where it was, we need to recognize that, and we'll start our first broadcast, legal broadcast, on the 9th of August. And that's what we've done.
You heard an interview with Brenda Leonard, co-founder and now manager of Bush Radio in Cape Town, South Africa. I spoke to her in May of 2009. Bush Radio played a huge role in defining the laws and practice of community radio in South Africa. Almost every one of the over 250 stations in South Africa today employs somebody trained at Bush Radio. It's now easy for you to get a first-hand impression of Bush Radio. Visit their website at bushradio.co.za or their Facebook pages at Bush Radio South Africa. You heard the rebroadcast of an interview about Bush Radio South Africa in honor of World Radio Day 2016 and Black History Month. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. While you're there, you can subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Downloads are free, and we appreciate any size donation to keep TUC Radio on the air. Our email address is tuc@tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.